another episode of the Vetpedia podcast, the official podcast of Catalan Pharma Research Limited. And today I have another amazing guest with me. His name is Dr. Ola Williams. Dr. Ola Williams is a veterinarian with over 3 years of experience in diagnostics and clinical medicine. He is currently a veterinarian diagnostician and researcher at Lanchak Diagnostic Services Company. His research professional interests include gut health, antimicrobial resistance, diagnostics, and clinical medicine. Stay tuned.
Good day, listeners. I am Dr. Olaoluwa Ola Williams, a veterinary diagnostician, and it's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Ola Williams. Thank you so much. Dr. Ola Williams, what is antimicrobial resistance in veterinary medicine? And what are the factors contributing to it in veterinary medicine?
All right. Thank you. Antimicrobial resistance, also known as AMR, is actually a concept by which certain microorganisms develop some form of resistance or opposition towards antimicrobial agents as a result of an evolutionary factor that they have developed. To put it in simple terms, in a case where some bacteria, for instance, begin to resist the effects of antibiotics, and then the drugs that are supposed to use to tackle such bacteria are beginning to become ineffective, that's when we say the bacteria has become resistant. So in that case, antimicrobial resistance has come into effect. Another example is, let's say, a fungal agent that upon application of antifungal agent, the fungal disease or the fungal manifestation is refusing to go away. In that case, we can say that fungal agent has developed antimicrobial resistance. So to put it in a very succinct and simple way, antimicrobial resistance is a phenomenon in which microorganisms develop or come to grow to develop a form of opposition or withstanding against antimicrobial agents. Thank you.
Okay. So what specific challenges of antimicrobial resistance, or let me just call it AMR,
yes.
And how do they impact animal and public health?
Okay, thank you very much. So some of the specific challenges of antimicrobial resistance in veterinary medicine is, first, there's limitations to the treatment options when antimicrobial resistance comes into play. For instance, in a case where a certain antibiotic or a certain antibacterial is beginning to elicit less response or is beginning to have less effect on the bacteria in question, it makes the treatment options shorter. So meaning you have to start looking for more drugs or higher advanced antibiotics to tackle such bacteria. Another challenge that it presents is that it increases the rates or the production cost of taking care of some of these diseases, because some of these drugs, the more powerful they are, the more expensive they get. So in a case where you are having in a case where AMR has taken full effect, you have to start scouting for higher level drugs or drugs that are more expensive just in a way to combat the already existing infection. Another problem or another challenge presented is in terms of food safety. As we all know, farm animals are important sources of proteins and important sources of food to us humans. And these animals are constantly, I don't know if I can say jabbed, quote unquote jabbed with antibiotics. So in a case where the animals are already incubating already incubating microorganisms, and then antimicrobial resistance have already set in because the microorganisms have not been cleared off, by the time we consume them, the resistant strains of these microorganisms are taken in by us, and as a result, we eventually come down to these diseases, and then we have a transfer of pathogens in such format. So, all in all, by the concept of the One Health approach, the challenges posed by antimicrobial resistance in veterinary medicine are basically as a result of a higher cost of treatments, cross-contamination due to the consumption by humans, and as well the economic losses that comes as a result of the increase in the cost of treatments.
Okay, I'm getting scared. Okay, with that, can you walk us through the strategies, or kindly discuss strategies that could be implemented to promote responsible antimicrobial use in vet practices?
Okay, first off, there has to be a form of awareness created on the concept of antimicrobial resistance itself. A lot of times, especially in the medical and the agricultural field, people just say AMR. What exactly is AMR? They have no idea. So we need to make them understand that microorganisms, for instance, bacteria, because that's actually one of the most commonly used, or that's one of actually an organism of choice that shows so much resistance to its agents. So bacteria, for instance, we talk about antibiotics, we need to make awareness that, okay, bacteria itself is a microorganism in a life cycle. So with that knowledge in hand, we should make the public, especially farmers and veterinarians, aware that bacteria themselves can evolve to develop resistant strains. And it's those resistant strains that begin to show opposition, that begin to withstand the effect of microbial organisms, to antibiotics. Another way is by ensuring the public knows about the misuse and inadequate use of antibiotics, because whether we like it or not, those are the two major factors that lead to antimicrobial resistance. When we indiscriminately use antibiotics in cases where you don't need to, or when we underuse them, let's say you are supposed to take a certain dosage or a certain amount and you are taking less, or you are not taking to the appropriate time, antimicrobial resistance to certain. So we need to ensure that there is a proper awareness first on what AMR is, and then there's also an awareness on how to avoid it by ensuring that we do not practice the overuse or misuse of antibiotics. Another thing we can also do is to implement a form of surveillance and monitoring system. Surveillance and monitoring basically describes the process of following the chronology or the pathogenesis of different bacterial infections and knowing how exactly they occur, so we can know the right antibiotic or antimicrobial agent to use, so we don't just indiscriminately administer antibiotics when we suspect a bacterial infection. So that will create some form of feedback, some form of mechanism or a framework or a database for relevant agencies, specifically the World Animal Health Organization or the NVRI or all these other bodies that are involved in monitoring and surveillance of diseases, so we can know the different disease strengths of these ants, of these microorganisms, the presentations they do, so we can know exactly how the kind of antimicrobial agents we administer in that regard. Another thing else we could also do is to make sure that we sensitize farmers on some of their policies on the farm, because some farmers are fond of, you know, because some of them run intensive systems of agriculture, so they are fond of just loading and jabbing their animals with antibiotics for no reason, just because they feel it is a form of, you know, it's a normal practice on the farm. They need proper guidance on how they are supposed to go about that, and instead of just loading and just, you know, subjecting the animals to unnecessary antibiotic use.
Okay, previously you made mention of microorganisms.
Yes.
Okay, so now I want to ask you, what are some of these microorganisms involved in domestic farm animals infections?
Okay, thank you very much. When we talk about microorganisms, basically we are describing animals that are too small to be seen or to be visible by naked eye, so we need the use of a microscope to view them.
Okay.
And then if you want to speak about common microorganisms in farm animals, it would be best for us to classify them on specific levels or on family levels. So we have all on class, according to class. I did a little bit of biology there, taxonomy. So let's take them class by class. There are majorly four classes of microorganisms that are involved in farm animal infection. Usually they are like the viruses, the bacteria, the helminths, and the parasites. So let's take them one after the other, the viruses. Viruses are very, very small microorganisms that are too invisible to the naked eye, that you need the a powerful electron microscope to visualize. And some examples of viruses that affect farm animals include the Newcastle disease virus, commonly known as Lassota. The vaccine of which is commonly known as Lassota. We have the IBD, commonly known as Gumboro, that's infectious bursal disease. We have infectious bronchitis. We have food and mouth disease, FMD, and numerous others just like that. In fact, coronavirus is also an example.
Okay, now you just mentioned something I'm familiar with.
Exactly. Coronavirus is an example.
Okay.
And then for bacteria, we have the salmonellosis caused by Salmonella and Shigella.
I've heard that before.
You've heard of E. coli as well.
Yes,
Escherichia coli. So those are, they belong to a family known as the Enterobacteriaceae. Those are don't get too scared. Those are the enteric bacteria. That means they affect the digestive system, they affect the GIT. Some of them have also been incriminated in the urinary tract, the urinary tract infections as well. Then we have tuberculosis, which is also a very important.
Are you serious? Let me just let you.
The tuberculosis is also a bacterial disease. It's a very important and significant disease because it constitutes a public health crisis. And it's caused by mycobacterium. It's caused by the mycobacterium complex, basically, because we have avian tuberculosis, we have human tuberculosis as well.
Okay.
Yes. And then let's move on to parasites. Now, there are two types of parasites. There's the ectoparasite and there's the endoparasite.
Okay.
The ectoparasites are the ones that are found outside of the host. The host is the animal affected. So the ectoparasites are usually the type of parasites that are found outside of the host. Examples include ticks, lice, mice, and fleas. And then we have the endoparasites. Now, the endoparasite itself is subdivided. Stay with me. The endoparasite itself is subdivided. We have what you would call the protozoans. The protozoans are the ones that include types like trypanosomiasis, trypanosomes rather, Babesia, Ehrlichia, Theileria, and Anaplasma. And then we have the Emeria species too as well.
Okay.
We also have the helminths. Helminths are basically worms. Under helminths, we have cestodes, nematodes, and trematodes. The cestodes are the tapeworms.
Okay.
The nematodes are the roundworms, and the cestodes are the flukes, basically. Examples of cestodes are like the tapeworms, Tenia solium, Tenia sardinata, you name it. Then for the nematodes, we have the roundworms, the hookworms and all that. And then for the trematodes, basically liver flukes, like I said, Fasciola, Fasciola gigantica, because that's what we found in West Africa. And then I think that basically does it for the endoparasites. And then we have fungi. Fungi is the last class of microorganisms. So for the fungi, examples include Candida, dermatophytes. Candida causes candidiasis, which is known as thrush. You've heard of it, you've probably heard of that.
Yeah.
Before. And then there's aspergillosis, or aspergillus, which causes aspergillosis. There's aflatoxins, there's dermatophytes, and many others. So those are basically the four classes of microorganisms that are incriminated in animal infections, farm animal infections.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much. You're about to blow my head off, but that's fine. I'm learning something new. Okay, so in the last episode about zoonotic diseases, I think one of the tips I gave was that we should try as much as possible to cook our meats.
Yes.
Like fully wash them and cook them fully. Okay, so do you think that even behaviors such as pork cooking, processing of animal products like meat, egg, or milk is contributing to antimicrobial resistance?
Most definitely, absolutely, absolutely. Because here's the thing, using meat, egg, and milk as, you know, as sources now, because those are the animal products that we consume the most, that we consume directly. There are other animal products we consume, like fats, like hides and skin, but the ones that go directly into our bodies, it's meat, milk, and eggs. You need to understand that if they come from an animal that is already exhibiting signs of AMR, it is very possible that from consuming products from this so diseased animal, we get to inherit the resistant strains of those microorganisms that the antimicrobials were unable to clear off. Let me break it down.
That's very, let me listen clearly.
Let me break it down.
Okay.
Now, let me give you an instance. A set of broiler chickens that are normally by 8 to 10 to 12 weeks, in fact 9 weeks basically, they are supposed to be on the table for consumption. If a poultry farmer has been jabbing them with antibiotics, let's say right before they are placed on the table, the antibiotics normally is supposed to have a window period or a therapeutic window where they are supposed to take effect, where they are supposed to be fully metabolized. But in a case where the animals are slaughtered before the antibiotic is allowed to exert its full effects, what would happen? We would have residues, what we call residues. We would have residues of those drugs left within either the flesh or the meal or the product of such birds. And by the time we consume them, we are consuming those excess antibiotics that have not been fully metabolized. So already, we are not supposed to take antibiotics except we have a bacterial infection that is set for prophylaxis. Prophylaxis means prevention. But already, by virtue of innocently consuming a chicken or in some consuming meat from already an animal that is showing signs of AMR, we have consumed antibiotics. So we ourselves, we are susceptible towards to showing the concept of AMR. Another stage is due to, just like I mentioned earlier, is due to contamination between species. Because we thought the last on the last episode we spoke about zoonosis, right? And we spoke about how zoonosis is the transfer, or is basically a disease that is transmissible between animals and humans. So one of the ways zoonosis comes to play is when we consume affected animals. So already when you take in an animal, or when you take in the product from an animal that is already suffering AMR, you are bound to exhibit signs of AMR yourself. Another example of how human behavior can cause, can contribute to AMR is when there is unhygienic practices. For instance, when you are cooking, just like you said, you are not cooking with adequate heat. Before you even cooked the chicken, you didn't wash well. You didn't let them simmer for long. You are just willy-nilly, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to use that term, you are just willy-nilly engaging in unhygienic kitchen or processing practices. You are bound to contaminate those things. And then by consequence, we get to ingest, or we get to consume the pathogens that you have introduced as a result of improper handling and processing of these products. And at the same time, the misuse of antibiotics, even in farming, right from the farm. You know, like I mentioned earlier, farmers, most of them favor an intensive, commercial farms, most of them favor an intensive form of farming. So they are already constantly introducing or constantly sensitizing the animals with antibiotics. So in a case where the animal has been subjected to so much antibiotics and you are not properly cooking or you are not properly processing, you are bound to take that into as well. So those are a few examples of how human behavior, one way or the other, contributes to the menace of antimicrobial resistance.
Okay. So, important roles veterinary pharmaceutical companies like Hatchaland play in addressing antimicrobial resistance?
Yes, most definitely. And one thing I'm actually very proud of, using Hatchaland as a case study, is the fact that it is a pharma research company. So we are not just a pharmaceutical company. We are also involved in research and development, meaning we are constantly looking for new and innovative ways to make products that could combat for a wide range of microorganisms, and at the same time confer or forestall against the outbreak of antimicrobial resistance. So like I said, research and development is one key area, and I admonish that every pharmaceutical company, just like Hatchaland, has a research and development department or organ that is catered to carrying out veritable researches into disease strains, and in order to produce new drugs and products that can cater to a wide range of antimicrobials, to a wide range of microorganisms, in order to forestall the occurrence of antimicrobial resistance. Another thing pharmaceutical companies need to do, which Hatchaland of course is doing, is what I would call regulation compliance, meaning all the products are done according to standard operational procedures, SOP. and they are done according to the standards as dictated by the constituted bodies and authorities. So you can be rest assured that any product coming out of Catchland is done in accordance to what bodies like NAFDAC, the Veterinary Council of Nigeria, the Standard Organization of Nigeria, and even the Pharmaceutical Council of Nigeria, they are according to the standards of which they are postulated. I can be rest assured that from time to time, there's a regular inspection exercise that is done, an inspection and accreditation exercise to ensure that the standards are met at all times. Another thing which I had already mentioned earlier is what I'll call surveillance and monitoring. Surveillance and monitoring, in this case, we are using data and studying disease trends and the forms of resistance that each of the microorganisms have presented in the past. And then we are keeping an eye on emerging diseases, because one of the consequences of antimicrobial resistance is the appearance of what I'll call emerging diseases. So we are adjusting our products to ensure that we are clearing them off. And then we are also tailoring our marketing strategies towards that effect. And another way is also by properly labeling and packaging, which is something Catchland Pharma Research Company does as well. So there's proper information on the route of administration of the drugs, there's proper information on the dosage, there's proper information on the withdrawal period, there's proper information on the indication and all of that. So any farmer or anybody using any of these products is well aware and is completely in the know of all the necessary information about those products. And finally, collaboration and partnerships. Collaboration and partnerships with research institutes, with government agencies, with the media, with veterinary extension agents, and all of this, because it is a system. And the pharmaceutical companies have an important role in that regard to ensure that AMR is
strengthened. Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Ola Williams. Okay, so you know this is new era, this is digital age. So what are some innovative technologies or approaches being developed to tackle AMR in veterinary medicine?
Alright, so one of the innovative technology, like I said, is the use of surveillance and monitoring. And it's not just about surveilling and monitoring.
Can you quickly just say how important that is?
Okay, so like I said, surveillance and monitoring allows you what you call early detection of the resistance. Normally we have early detection of the disease, but in this case we are studying the resistance. So early detection of the resistance will help you know the trends by which the bacteria are undertaking, and if you need to make a product to counter that resistance, you'll be able to do that on time, not until the bacteria, you know, goes rogue. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say, but you know what I mean,
like
when the bacteria goes rogue, and then the drugs are not working. Okay, then we need what you call tracking the resistance trend, which was basically what I said earlier. Then advocacy and policy engagement, because really, let's not lie, in a country like Nigeria, what really causes enforcement and what really will drive enforcement is when we have policies in place, and policies backed up with consequences if you default or if you falter. So that is another innovative approach that is being introduced. Then supporting rational drug use by properly enlightening farmers, by educating them on how best to apply antimicrobial agents. Another thing, just like you said in the last episodes, detecting zoonotic risk, because the major essence of antimicrobial resistance is not just to stop the scourge in animals, but it's to prevent them from being transferred to humans, which is why I like the fact that the first episode of this podcast was on zoonosis. So that's another place. That's how everything is a web. They are all mapped together.
Yeah.
They all function in a synchronized order. So one can't go without the other. They all have a role to play. It's an ecosystem. You understand? And finally, guarding against public health intervention too as well. So those are some of the innovative strategies that have been introduced.
That's nice. Thank you for that amazing point. Okay, so how can we balance the need for effective treatment with the risk of AMR development?
Okay, I think I already answered this earlier. Basically, creating due awareness on antimicrobial agents and the spectrum of microorganisms that they are conferring against. So ensuring that farmers and other stakeholders are aware of what exactly the antimicrobial agents do. Another thing is use proper diagnosis. Now, when I say proper diagnosis, there are different forms of diagnosis. I don't want to bore you too much on that. There are different types of diagnosis. So, one thing I've noticed, especially while in practice, is most people, they just stop at their tentative diagnosis. They don't go for confirmation or for differential diagnosis. So, for instance, now, if farmers notice some certain clinical manifestations on their farms, they don't necessarily go down to find the roots of that disease or those infections. They just observe, okay, come on, now waiting they do this animal with this, go and pour antibiotics in their water, go and administer antibiotics. They don't go as far as going for further diagnostic tests. Even when they have carcasses, many of them, the worst they do is they open up or they send samples to the lab for opening up and for PM results, but they don't take any action for that. So I recommend, in this case, I recommend that antibiotic sensitivity test is always carried out. We normally call it AST. So we carry out constant AST so that we can know exactly the bacteria that is causing these infections or the microorganisms causing these infections, instead of carrying out holistic therapeutic strategies. The moment people notice a bacterial infection, they just administer any antibiotic. They don't know exactly what that antibiotic is working against. They don't know exactly what the antimicrobial is working against. So carrying out diagnostic tests is also also another way of balancing AMR.
Okay, rounding up the show now, Dr. Ola Williams. Are there any potential consequences of failing to address AMR in veterinary medicine?
My, there are several consequences, and I'm not trying to scare you. Some of these consequences are of global significance, because first, we are talking about a looming public health crisis. If we do not curtail the scourge of AMR, we are looking at a looming public health crisis. First of all, zoonosis. I keep coming back to zoonosis.
Yeah, why? Why?
Because that affects us as humans.
Okay.
You know, veterinary medicine, when people hear veterinary medicine, they just think animals. But why are we taking care of those animals? We are trying to prevent the diseases of those animals from transferring to us humans. So an AMR plays an integral role in all of those. So preventing a full-blown public health crisis comes from knowing the right antibiotic to use and ensuring that the right antibiotic is used against the right bacteria.
Okay.
Another consequence is also that of increasing the cost of treatment, because by the time you are running out of options, you are seeing that this disease is showing up every time. You'll be using different drugs, it's not working. That means you would have to start spending more to look for higher drugs. And then there are some drugs that are already on some form of restricted status. For instance, chloramphenicol is a very powerful don't get scared. Chloramphenicol is a very powerful antimicrobial that has been banned in some way. So you can't just go over the counter and get them. You need a doctor's prescription, or you need to have a special kind of permission to access them.
Okay.
These are things that eventually will come to be if the consequences of antimicrobial resistance is allowed to live late, if we do not take proper action. Another example is the risk of increasing the cost of production for farmers. No farmer is happy to spend money buying antimicrobial agents every time and not seeing the reward for his efforts. So that would also leave an economic burden on not only the farmer, but on the veterinarians and the consumers. Because the farmer, to maximize profit, the farmer would do what? He would levy the cost on the production cost that he has had to incur. So that's a part where the economic burden comes to play. And finally, another consequence that we have to watch out for is the fact that we might eventually have to start making strict policies on the use and the accessibility of some of these antimicrobial agents, because at some point it gets to a point where government will have to step in and then they will buy the use of antimicrobial agents, it will raise their price, and it will reduce their accessibility to farmers.
you very much, Dr. Ola Williams. We have officially come to the end of today's episode. Well, as usual, my tips. I would say we should practice good hygiene. Protecting ourselves from infection can help us avoid bacterial infections and need antibiotics. Because the more we use antibiotics as a society, the more the problem of antibiotic resistance can grow. Thank you.